Comedy Books with Aaron, Polly, Wayne, and Andrew. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And I am Andrew.
Guys, I was walking into the dining room yesterday, and, you know, we got a big bay window there that looks out across our yard and over to the neighbor's yard. And what do I see but a giant 20-foot skeleton staring into my house?
Awesome. Over a fence?
Yeah. He's just, you know, standing at the edge of my neighbor's yard looking menacingly over at mine. I'm like, that was really rather startling when I walked into the room.
Based on the geography, are there other options for him to have it facing, or do you think this was a message directed at you by facing it towards you?
I think it's directed at me. I believe that this is an at-me decoration.
Wow. Sounds kind of awesome to me.
Yeah, you know what you need to do, Aaron? You need to get a 30-foot skeleton and have it facing his window.
I almost had Suzanne talked into the 20-foot-tall Nosferatu last week. She shied away from it at the last moment, largely because she didn't know who Nosferatu was.
Like, well, you know, is he bad? Is he like a Nazi? Is she going to find
sounds
out?
Like Nazi Feratu.
Nazi Feratu.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You know, there's a small street that runs nearby where they've built, they started out with one 20-foot skeleton, and then they add a second one, and then they added a dog, and they're looking over like this 6-foot privacy fence out onto the road. And then during, depending on what's going on, they dress them differently. So like on a Chiefs game day, they'll have like maybe a Chiefs outfits on them, like on a Mizzou day, they'll have Mizzou stuff on them. So they dress them up and change their accoutrements based on what's going on. They put them up kind of mid-September, I'd say, early September, and then leave them up through Halloween.
That's cool.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, Andrew, you said something that reminded me.
Accoutrements?
Accoutrements. I knew you were going to pick on that.
Right. You mentioned Kansas City Chiefs. This has nothing to do with the podcast, but I am going to... a Kansas City Chiefs game here in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I don't know. End of the month. I'm going to be out in Kansas City, Missouri. In person. I'm going to go see the sports ball in person.
Stayed away from me.
I'm excited about it.
You went to the exact opposite side of the state from you, Wayne.
Exactly. You can't get any you can't be in the same state and further away.
Yeah. That seems like a message directed at you, Wayne.
That's right. That is,
dear listener. Did you catch the lack of excitement? That's how you know you're listening to a comic book podcast.
I'm excited. But I'm more excited that Taylor wrote a song about you on her new album, or inspired by you, from what I've heard.
Yeah. Yeah. Song most would. Important review of the week, The Life of a Showgirl.
So no one else cares about Life of the Showgirl besides us, Paul, but I'm just going to ask you one question real quick. What was your favorite, at this point, what is your favorite track?
Oh, Life of Ophelia, hands down. But I also like Life of a Showgirl.
I'm a big fan of Opalite and Actually Romantic. But
yeah, those are good ones. I would say it's mostly good. There's
Aaron, like what happened to this podcast?
Like, you don't know. I am
Taylor Swift. I think I joined the wrong show.
I am aware.
You guys don't even know how to get traffic. This is how we get traffic. We talk about Taylor Swift.
I am aware of who Taylor Swift is. I know what she looks like. I understand that she's dating a sports ball guy. But I could not pick out one of her songs. If you played it for me, I wouldn't have any
idea. The Life of Ophelia. Go listen now, Aaron. I mean, not now. After we podcast.
Yeah, no, I'm okay. Hold on, guys.
We have things to talk about. We have Peacemaker. We've got DCKO. And we've got new Transformers. Yeah. So talk about Peacemaker and then go listen to Taylor Swift.
The season finale of Peacemaker aired this week and I loved it. Yet the entire time I'm watching it, I kept thinking, oh, Wayne's got to hate this, because it leaned so hard into music. Like for instance, Nelson guest stars in this episode of Peacemaker, as well as Foxy Shazam. And the whole time I kept going, Wayne has got to hate this. I loved it. I thought the show was brilliant. I thought that it was just exquisitely written and perfectly acted. I had no idea John Cena had such range. I just loved everything about it. in particular, I loved the musical guest stars and how they played into the story. But Wayne, I gotta know, what'd you think of the show?
Yeah, why would you think I would hate that? I love how music works with the show. I just
you
don't
had
like
made
the theme song.
Yeah, you had said last week that you didn't like the theme song for this season, and I really love that song.
Yeah, and I don't like that song, but I actually used to have a Nelson CD.
Okay, all right then. I'm sorry. What did you think of the Foxy Shazam appearance?
The song was okay there. I just don't like it as a theme, especially compared to last season's theme.
I like that they're switching it out for each season, and I while I did not care for it in the first episode, it really warmed up on me on the second episode. But
I heard that last time, and I thought, you know, I'm going to try it. I'm going to listen to it again. And it starts playing, and my wife is sitting next to me. She's like, hit the skip button. Hit the skip button. I'm like, but I've heard that if you listen to it for three times, that's just Stockholm Syndrome. Hit the skip button. So I did not listen to it again until in the episode. But overall, I mean, our opinion seems to differ from the internet's, who was severely disappointed with the finale.
Oh, really? But I haven't caught any internet perspective on it.
For some reason, people were expecting big cameos, and this was not big cameos. This was all strong character moments and wrapping up a lot of the threads.
And really setting up the next season and future activity, apparently, within the DC universe. You know, the story this season has been about the secret dimensional portal that Peacemaker owns. And at the end of the previous episode, at the end of the previous episode, he surrenders it to Argus, and they use it. They begin mapping out all these, you know, different alien worlds that they can get access to. And General Flag aligns with Lex Luthor and, you know, uses one of these dimensions to function as the new prison for metahumans. And, you know, the first prisoner of which, again, spoilers, at the end of the season is Peacemaker. And I thought there was so much emotional growth between the characters. The moments between towards the end of the episode between God, I can't remember her name now. All of a sudden, not Harcourt.
Ads.
Thank you.
Because I'm not going to try to pronounce her full name.
Well, I keep wanting to. I had a different name in my head, and I knew that wasn't correct. But yes, Ads. And then, you know, also with Adrian and Economist, I mean, just all the characters. And I love, you know, one of the things I was kind of groaning about is that it was clear that we were going to lose some characters out of Argus that we weren't going to get to see again. But they get pulled over into the new setup for Peacemaker. So you're getting Timothy Meadows is going to be, you know, part of Checkmate, which is what, you know, Ads and Harcourt set up. Which I love. I love that they're running Checkmate,
With Sasha Bordeaux and
I mean, just the show's fantastic. I love it.
I really like how they took people that were the bad guys throughout the season, and they let them see what they were really working for and join up.
Yeah, Sasha Bordeaux, who you kind of hate her from the jump. And then when she sees what's happening with Flag and Luthor, you know, she turns and she's like, this isn't what I signed up for. This isn't who I am.
Yeah, because a big part of it was throughout the episode as they're exploring these other planets, you know, other universes, their friends are dying in front of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of these worlds have horrible things in them, even Candyland world.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, and all the different worlds were great, and I can't wait to see what's in the prison world. You know, Salvation is what they're calling it. You know, you hear all this roaring; it sounds like a bunch of dinosaurs off in the distance. I can't wait to see how that works out. But
yeah, I tell you, the Peacemaker and Harcourt scenes—they did that so beautifully.
They did.
Like the whole time, they have us thinking from the beginning that the two of them had hooked up, and it was just a drunken sex thing, and to show that it was just—it's a kiss.
It was a kiss, and it was dancing, a kiss, and Nelson.
Yeah, and a whole date night.
That's right. And a really good date. I mean, they really showed you how good that date was. And her
finally admitting that she had feelings for him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it meant everything, you asshole.
Yeah. It's a great show. I just cannot tell you how very happy I am with Peacemaker. I thought it was an excellent show.
Do you know that Gunn said that he's not sure there'll be a season three?
I don't want to hear that.
What he said specifically is we will see these characters elsewhere first.
Right.
Yeah. He's not sure if there's going to be a season three, meaning there might be a season one of Checkmate is what I think. But
yeah, maybe.
We're definitely going to. It's going to tie in heavily to Superman.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is, you know, Lex Luthor has set this up. And, you know, of course, we understand that Luthor and Superman are fighting on the same side of things in the next Superman movie. So that should be an interesting mix, given that Luthor is the one who, you know, pointed out this strategy to Flag. So, yeah, great stuff. Highly recommend it. Paul, you don't know what you're missing. Andrew, have you started watching season two yet?
I've started, but I've not gotten that far into it yet.
Yeah. Well, it's really good. It's really good.
Yeah.
I have heard horrible reviews about Tron Ares, which, breaks my heart. But I didn't realize until the reviews started coming out that Jared Leto's in it. And, that's a tough nut. I don't much care.
Yeah, I don't know why people still cast that guy in anything.
Yeah. But boy, it sure does look good.
Yeah, I mean,
it does. I mean, I'll see it, and I will probably see it in IMAX just because it's so supposed, you know, the visuals of it. But I just hear it's just a dumb action movie, which fine, it'll be fine.
I mean, I'm going to see it. Like, I'm absolutely going to see it while it's in the theaters. Yeah. I'm just not in a hurry. And you know, it's good. Sometimes bad reviews helps you manage your expectations going into it, so that you might enjoy it more than you might expect because you've heard so many bad things about it.
Yep.
I have no idea what this is, but it's got Jared Leto, so I probably won't see it.
If you're not familiar, if you don't have Tron nostalgia, Wayne, I don't see any reason. Go watch the original Tron from 1981, 82.
I know. Let me rephrase that. I didn't know they were making yet another Tron.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I say I have no idea what this is. Like, I don't know why there's another sequel. I don't know what the story of this one is.
I love the original Tron. Just love it.
Wayne, you know, in the first and second ones, they went into the computer realm, and this one, the computer realm's coming out into the real world.
That sounds dumb.
I'm not arguing with you, but I'm gonna go see it because it's a Tron movie,
and it's got a Nine Inch Nails soundtrack, and it looks awesome. I mean, the special effects on it just look fantastic.
But I don't think Daft Punk is in it, which is one of the best things about the second Tron movie.
You're absolutely right.
Nine Inch Nails is exciting too.
Yeah, I know. I'll take some Nine Inch Nails. So
I enjoyed their soundtrack to the video game Quake, but you know.
Yes, Quake.
We'll see. We'll see how I feel after I watch that.
Let's see how this compares to Quake.
I mean, for a 90s video game, that game was banging. Like the sound, the music and Quake was amazing.
And that, dear listener, is how that you know that everyone on your comic book podcast is over the age of 40.
True. Yeah.
But you know, you guys talking about multiversal things, multiversal prisons and stuff kind of leads into, you know, DC's leaning heavily into the multiverse because we had DC KO this week, first issue of the big crossover event.
I went a little bit cross-eyed reading the Quantum Quorum parts, but I'm actually really excited for this. What do you guys think?
I hated this.
Oh, come on.
This was one of the worst books I have read in a long time.
But why?
I hate the concept. I hate that they're doing this whole tournament thing. Seems ridiculous. I am tired of, the universe is going to be destroyed, but we're going to remake it again with the winner concept. Like that whole, every time they do a big event, they have to destroy the universe and rebuild it. I hate that. I hate the very concept of a tournament like this going on. I hate the fact that once again, it's going to be another storyline where they can kill characters left and right with no consequence. Like Joker gets to kill Batman because it's going to all be undone. Wouldn't get to kill him if it wasn't going to be undone.
Yeah, I got to say, to me, this is just a DC version of the contest Chest of Champions that is, you know, shown up periodically in Marvel stuff, and it always gets reset. But I always enjoy reading them.
Which the concept of, the champion, I hate that too.
Yeah, see, I've always enjoyed those storylines when they trot out occasionally. Usually the Grand Masters involved somehow, and I've always loved them, so I'm looking forward to it.
I hated the writing on this. I hated the setup. I hate everything about this. And even though I think it's kind of interesting that we're going to see some characters from other comic universes brought in, I don't want to see it. I don't want to read the story because I hated this with a passion.
Aaron, Paul, what did you gentlemen think?
I want to hear Aaron's thoughts before I go in on mine.
Well, you know that I had reservations about it going in. I'm not a Contest of Champions guy. I shared that last week when we were talking about the upcoming book. But I got to say, this book was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. In fact, I enjoyed it rather a lot. I enjoyed how much character we got from the point of view of Superman. That, you know, Superman has to be coaxed into this because, you know, he's not a guy who's all about, you know, winning for himself. He's about bringing everybody along. And, right. You know, they make real clear to him at the jump that, you know, for this, you've got to be, you know, mercenary. You've got to win for you. You know, that's the kind of individual who can win this contest. And it's got to be you. You know, it's got to be a good guy to win this. And I like that it's not just fighting. It's not just, you know, seeing Lobo go up against Supergirl or whatever. You know, there is an actual character study happening here. And I wasn't expecting that. I just thought this was just going to be, you know, matchups. So I dug that. I get what Wayne is saying, that, you know, you'd never have Joker kill Batman, you know, on the in the first book of a series like this if it wasn't going to get reset. But, you know, we know what's going to happen in this book, you know, in terms of, you know, resetting, that the deaths in this book will largely not be real. But it does appear that a great deal of thought has been applied to how this book is. And I don't think there's any way you can discern how the brackets are going to work, because there's going to be so much writing and character involved on these pages. You know, just like you never would have expected Batman to die in the first round, I think it's important that you know, one of the three drop out early, because otherwise, you know, you're going to have a matchup between Batman and Superman or Batman and Wonder Woman. And, you know, it's that's how it would typically shake out. And I don't think Superman makes it to the last round. I think it's going to be somebody completely out of left field. It'll, you know, and if it were 10 years ago, I'd have said it'd be Cyborg, you know, because of how much weight they put on Cyborg. But I like this book. I think it's well drawn. I think it's well written. And I was surprised by the depth of it. So I kind of liked KO.
You know, we had our
prediction on winner. I'm going to go and throw this out there.
Yeah.
I'm predicting Lex Luthor is the winner. That, you know, he is going to be the one that they need to be ruthless enough to take on Darkseid.
You know, we had our bracket matchup for March Madness, Super Family versus the, you know, the Fantastic Four family, and Superman didn't win there either. I mean, you know what I mean? So I don't know who's going to win. And the other thing, there's a bracket at the back of this book, but it doesn't have any of these other characters that were just announced, like Vampirella, Samantha, Sub-Zero.
Yeah, so how did they get in there?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm not sure how much to pay attention to this bracket.
So if you read the articles they talk about, what they're there for, they're not part of the bracket. The characters go off into pocket universes to train against them.
I'm glad you read the article, Wayne.
Yeah.
Paul, what did you think?
Honestly, you know, I thought it was, you know, there are certain aspects of it that I'm like, this is dumb as shit, admittedly. You know? You're talking to the Quantum Quorum, and yeah, well, it's less, and the Quantum Quorum's like, the closer you get to the heart, my calculations say the heart to a stage tournament to battle each other. What? And then it goes,
yeah, how do you calculate that? Yeah. How do you predict something so ridiculously stupid?
Battle Royale, you know, I'm like, what? But then then, you know, then the heroes are like, well, we have to save everyone on Earth, so we're going to build arcs, and then we have to get rid of all the villains, so we're going to send T-spheres out and send all the villains to the Phantom Zone. I'm like, whoa. 75 years of the DC Universe, no one thought of this before? Like, I feel like you could have taken all of the, so many villains off the board if you did this, you know, years ago. And I understand they do say, like, that they hate doing this. They hated sending the villains to the Phantom Zone, blah, 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 blah. But I'm like, no one wanted to send Joker to the Phantom Zone like 45 years ago.
Exactly. Like,
you know, that yes. kind of thing. So you have to suspend the disbelief, you know, on those things. Because I'm like, wow, that is an awful easy resolution for 75 years of villains killing people in comic books. On the flip side,
not even
it doesn't work.
Yeah,
so, there's that.
Phantom Zone. How many times have they been searching for and not able to find the villains? Yet at any point, he could just send a T-Sphere to find them all.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's silly. On the flip side, it didn't work. So I was like, okay, well, it didn't work anyway. So I'm fine with that, right? So, you know, because the villains pop
up. Mr. Terrific, Mr. Sucks. Yeah, sorry.
Whoa, shots fired.
Mr. Lame. But I thought, honestly, those dumb things to the book, I still really actually enjoyed the book. And I think, because it's so dumb, I'm like, okay, you need to turn off your brain and just have fun with this.
Yep.
Right? Like, I think that the intent of this book is just have fun. Like, yeah, we're going to, you know, they mentioned the absolute universe iteration of the character characters will pop up at some point as part of the Battle Royale. You know, the pocket universe thing where they have to train against Annabelle, you know, and Homelander and Sub-Zero, which, I mean, who saw that coming? You know, in my mind, we are literally one issue in, and I'm already being surprised at what's happening in this book. So even, for me, the fact that they found ways to surprise me, that literally in 100 years, I would never have been like, oh yeah, Annabelle's going to pop up in DC KO issue 3. Samantha from Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, you know, stuff like that. So, I mean, I honestly think I'm really looking forward to seeing where this goes, because I think it's just going to be a lot of fun. So I'm on board.
Here's my question. Is there just going to be one main KO book, or is there going to be 8 billion KO books?
According to the book. Yeah. So you've got coming in this month, you've got Justice League, The Omega Act, DC KO number 1, Titans number 28, Superman number 31, Flash 26, and Justice League Unlimited 13. So you've got a bunch of tie-ins. November, you've got DC KO Night Fight number 1, Aquaman, Titans, DC KO number 2, Superman, The Flash, and Justice League Unlimited.
And I want to mention that DC KO Night Fight, before we move on from that book, is a book that, one, has Dan Mora on art. Joshua Williamson, I believe, is the writer on the book. He's currently writing Superman and stuff like that. Yeah, it's Joshua Williamson and Dan Mora. And the story being told there is that the Batman of the future have to fight. So it's a multiverse book. I don't know how, I guess we'll find out more how it plays in DC KO issue 2. But basically, it's the Batman of different universes where each Robin had to grow up to take over the Batman mantle. So it's Dick Grayson as Batman, Damian Wayne as Batman, Jason Todd as Batman.
Stephanie Brown as Batman.
Maybe. And who's the, why am I forgetting? Tim Drake as Batman. And it's written by Joshua Williamson and Dan Moore. I am 1,000% in on that first issue.
So DC KO explodes in December with All Fight Month, and the battle continues, this says, through March of 2026.
That makes sense.
It's a lot of money, right? Yeah, I'm going to save a lot of money on DC books for a while, because while this is going on, I'm out on all of them. Except now I am really tempted by that Night book, because anytime you get to see Tim Drake Batman.
Yeah. Well,
and Wayne, what I'll say is I don't think every DC book is playing into this. Like, they just relaunched the Batman book. So I think that's why Night Fight is its own thing, because I think Batman is still kind of continuing slightly outside of the DC KO continuity, you know, the new Matt Fraction Batman book, stuff like that. So, yeah, because honestly, you're kind of screwed on both ends of the fence, because, you know, DC is all in on KO. Marvel is all in on Age of Revelation.
Yeah, so, I'm not interested in that either.
Yeah, so we're dealing with the big winter crossover season right now.
I think I'm gonna mainly stick with the core book. I'm definitely gonna pick up the DC KO, and I'll probably pick up a few like the Night Fight and a few of the tie-ins. But I think I'm mainly gonna just try to read the main storyline, yeah. And we'll see how it goes.
I think I'll stick with KO, Superman, and Justice League Unlimited. I think those are the three that I'm gonna do.
The books I would normally pick up, I will continue to pick up.
Yeah.
And DC KO and Night Fight is probably where I'm at with it.
Yeah. Unless but I mean, you couldn't pay me money to get into an Aquaman book. So,
but he's gonna fight King Shark in some way.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is.
Until he fights Namor,
That would be a good. Yeah, and that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, get me some of those DC. You want to actually surprise me? Let's get some of those crossovers going.
Well, what they need to do is get some Transformers up in here.
Hey, I mean, every other property is joining. Yeah, everything else is joining Transformers. Why not DC and Marvel?
That's right.
Yes. So Transformers issue 25 is the other big release this week. And the reason it's big is because it is written, it's a new creative team. Robert Kirkman takes over on writing duties from Daniel Warren Johnson. And Dan Mora takes over on art for the second half of the book because Jorge Corona, who's been basically the artist of the book for the last, 20 issues or so,
24
draws the first half of the book.
Yeah, and there's quite a change
drawn by Daniel Warren Johnson. So yeah,
I'm kind of curious what you guys thought of the change in art. I will throw this out there that I felt like I enjoyed the art a lot better halfway on.
Yeah, when they switch.
Dan Mora is. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, this book has had a visual style for the first 24 issues, but like Dan Mora draws Transformers that the Transformers I see in my head. Right.
Well, it's a cleaner, crisper art style. It's kind of more four color hero type art than the style we have had up to this point. That's been a little more, I don't know, dark and dim and dingy and you know.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about the divide, the first half is telling Decepticon story, the second half the Autobots. So when they switch over the art, they switch over perspective too.
Yes. I got to tell you, I love Megaton's speech. Let's call it a speech, motivational speech that he gives in the first half of this book. That was badass.
I will say the only issue I have with the first half of the book is right now the current state of the Decepticons is that it features a lot of interest or a lot of not interesting Decepticons. Like the group of Decepticons that are, currently at play are pretty much the Constructicons and
Bruticus.
And Bruticus, right? Like, it's like, okay. Like, a lot of them look alike. Starscream's kind of off the table right now.
Yep.
I had that same issue, Paul. It's like, all the Decepticons are members of the Combiners, and they have not done the work yet to make any of the individual members interesting.
Yeah.
And the Decepticons are in really bad shape. So, like, the whole first arc, the Autobots have been the ones that are banged up, mm-hmm. barely getting by, and now we're seeing that kind of switch where the Autobots are starting to rebuild and the Decepticons are in horrible shape.
Agreed. But what do you think about this kind of surprise reveal? Well, first, I love this Colonel Major, whatever he is, who shows up to talk to Optimus Prime. Love this character. And then what do you think about the kind of the reveal at the end of this new intellectual property entering the chat, if you will?
I absolutely loved it. And that's why I wanted to reach out and make sure that you guys recognize the character.
Oh, yeah.
This is this is a little more obscure of the 80s cartoons in that Miles Mayhem, the main villain from the cartoon Mask, shows up
as a good guy ostensibly at the moment.
Yeah, at the moment, because even in the original Mask, he helped make the Mask machines.
Yeah.
Before switching sides,
before joining Venom.
Yep, he's the perfect person to bring in to build, rebuild the Autobots.
I got to say, I'd normally just assume he's going to be evil, but this whole, Baroness still hanging in as a good person over in the G.I. Joe book makes me wonder, like, maybe Miles is going to be good in this iteration. I don't know. Yeah. It's hard to say.
Double down on Baroness being a good one.
Yeah. And as long as she stays good, it makes, I don't know if they do this intentionally, but as long as Baroness stays good, it makes me question anytime like a character shows up on the opposite side, whether it's just a ploy or if they're really going to stick on the other side.
How cool would it be if Mask gets created using Transformers technology?
Yeah.
I mean, that would make sense and be really cool. And I'm curious, there is one panel we see where Skywarp had been on board the Ark. The Ark had been off in another dimension and it comes back. And he shows the universe he came from, the horrors he saw. They look really familiar, but for some reason I can't place who that is holding the scepter.
Oh, Globulus, right?
I thought it looked like the Cobra La 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 people is what I thought it looked like.
Yeah, yeah, that's a G.I. Joe reference. That's where Cobra Commander came from.
That's why it looked familiar, but didn't resonate with me as much as it would with you guys.
Yeah, and they're the ones who had imprisoned Megatron for the first part of the Transformers arc.
Okay, and I like how they are setting up Alita One versus Optimus.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that
this
tension,
book was great,
and it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I like that Robert Kirkman has now come in, and don't get me wrong, you know, there was always that tie, but I'm not going to say he completely retooled the book. A lot of the feel is very similar. You know, it's not like a stark concrete, a larger intergenre, even more so because you've got the reference to the Cobra Law characters. You've got, you know, Miles Mayhem. You know, like he's definitely building some groundwork for this larger storyline that they have at play. And I love that. I love the connective thread that's going on here. And I love that Dan Moore is on this book. I mean, truly, I love Dan. He's probably one of my favorite comic artists right now. And he's all over the place because I get to see Dan Moore art like almost every week, it feels like.
Dan Moore's busy right now. He's working hard. Hey, are either of you guys still reading Void Rivals currently?
I was actually telling Wayne this right before the podcast that I'm getting caught up on Void Rivals. But I'm behind, but
you know, I don't read it regularly. I read Void Rivals when there's a special guest star that I read about. Like I picked up the Hot Rod issues.
Yeah. I haven't gotten there yet that's how far back I was, but I'm working on it.
So let me know for people when you read it, let me know if Jace and the Wheeled Warriors suddenly show up in Void Rivals, because with this whole Mask showing up in Transformers, I'm just waiting for the next 80s animated toy line IP to drop in. And I'm thinking Jace and the Wheeled Warriors would be a good fit.
I'm thinking Centurions.
Yeah.
Centurions is probably, you know, I wouldn't be surprised because I know Silverhawks is already claimed by another company, but Centurions, that's got potential.
Captain Planet is already going over in another company as well, which is a really good book.
Hmm.
But Centurions fits the technology aspect of this.
All I really want is Dino Riders. So if we can just work on Dino Riders.
Well, you know, they found that skeleton, that fossil, that dinosaur fossil at the back of the cave while the Ark was disappeared.
Right,
dinosaurs and Cadillacs.
You set up for that?
it's Chekhov's gun, right? If you're gonna show someone a skeleton of a dinosaur in Act One, by the end of Act Two, you need to have dinosaurs tearing around in some way.
That's true. That's true. That's a fact.
The only thing that I had a complaint about in this book was the Ark. There's a scene where their spaceship, the Ark, like randomly comes into play, comes back into their cave. I was very confused.
Me too.
In the visual storytelling of that scene. And I know they are too, but it was like, they're in a cave and they're like, whoa, the Ark is back. And I'm like, what just happened? Like, did it just
I'm still confused about it because I haven't seen anything in the other books. I assume maybe we'll see something in one of the other books to explain it, or maybe we'll find out later on in Transformers. But no, I'm baffled about why it disappeared and why it suddenly reappeared. It's so random at the moment.
I'd assume they're using Skywarp's ability.
Tell for people who know less about Transformers like me, what is Skywarp's ability?
Teleportation.
And he's one of the people one of those people that were on the Ark when it disappeared?
Skywarp is one of the Decepticon Seekers, and they have, when the Ark reappears at first.
He's one of those guys who's like peeking around the corner.
You see him tied, he's the one that's connected to the ship.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Where right. they have all the tubes and the wires going into them.
Yes.
His brother, Thunderbolt, is there, is the one that attacks them that saw the horrible things.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Okay. That makes a lot.
Thank you for the clarification. Guy Warp is tied into the ship systems, and his ability is to teleport. So
that's perfect.
He teleported the entire ship to Cobra La and then teleported it back.
When we're not sure why he would do that, but yeah, that makes perfect sense about how. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you.
There's still a lot of story left to happen with that, but I assume it's his ability since he's the one that's wired into the ship, and they do a close up on him with the wires in him.
Yeah. Hey, did any of you guys read Strange Tales this week from Marvel?
No.
No. Okay. The only Marvel book I've gotten to so far is Amazing Spider-Man Torn, the new J. Michael Straczynski run.
Yep. How was any good? Worth reading?
I really enjoyed it. It's set during the college years, and there's a whole lot of Gwen is trying to set him up with Mary Jane, but he already likes Gwen and doesn't know how to tell her.
Gwen is still alive at this point.
Oh yeah, this is him early college with Harry, Gwen, and Mary Jane.
Okay, all right.
Did you guys see the announcement this week that Thundar the Barbarian is coming to comics?
What company?
It's going to be Dynamite.
Okay. I did like Thundar, yeah.
Same. And, you know, I mean, I didn't know this until much later, but, you know, all based on designs by Jack Kirby, which I'm
fascinated. They had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I'm super excited. I hope, you know, Dynamite frequently doesn't execute well. They get a lot of really good covers, but the interiors kind of sucks. But Jason Aaron is writing it. Ooh. And I'm like, okay, I'm in. You got Thundar the Barbarian, Ookla the Mock, and Thundar's amazing sun sword. Yeah, I'm there.
I just loved how I love the kind of backdrop of the post-apocalyptic world that they would travel around in. I always loved the backgrounds.
Yep. So I'm excited about that. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, you know, over these next 2 weeks, we have a lot of DCKO and from the big, honestly, the big, we get a lot of that over the next month. So, strut in or hop out of
crossovers. Very good. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about DCKO. Who's your pick for the next bracket? Who's going to be the ultimate fighting champion in the DC universe? Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your voicemail on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
Also,
what a deal. Well, hey, guys, let's do it all over again next time. And, you know, maybe we'll work ourselves into the bracket. Maybe we'll, you know, maybe we'll put Wayne in his luchador outfit and, you know, sick him on the Joker.
Maybe one of the heroes will come here and train with us in our bubble universe.
I love it. I love it. We'll set the mattresses up in the backyard. We'll be good to go.
Catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.